Welcome to A Seat at the Table with Chef Ken, the podcast where food, stories, and the people behind them all come together. Every great meal has a story, and every great story deserves a seat at the table. I'm Pete Scalia, and today, well, since this is the inaugural episode, we figured we should take a moment to get to know your host, Ken Durbin, the at-home chef. Ken, it's an honor for me to be here with you for your first podcast episode.
Well, thank you very much. You know, the idea of this podcast was that, you know, I've been a private chef for years, and I've been a witness to so many awesome stories and conversations at the table, but there's never been a camera to record it. And over the 11 plus years that I've been doing it, I thought, well, it would be so awesome to bring people to a table and tell those stories and really get to know, you know, the people behind them. And I'm so excited to start this. You know, I struggle with having myself as the first guest. It sounds a little arrogant. It's not. What we're going to do today is, talk a little bit about who I am, maybe some stories you guys out there haven't heard before, and just kind of set the table, I think is what we're doing today. So, I'm really excited. I have to be honest, it's a little nerve-wracking. I don't typically talk about myself very much. Usually I hide behind my food, but I think we're going to have a great time, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's a great way to get to know you. Now, of course, you know, Ken Durbin wasn't always Chef Ken.
No.
How did that come about?
Oh, wow. Well, we're going to have to rewind back to...
Because you weren't always a chef.
No. As a matter of fact, for years and years, I did completely different things. I've kind of had different lives within lives, you know. But the cooking really starts at a young age. I learned how to cook young because my sister was 5 years younger than me. My mom and dad, my dad owned a business. He was always busy. My mom was working multiple jobs. And, you know, I got tired of always eating the same old same frozen pizzas, hamburger helper, you know, whatever. So I had to start honing those skills young. And one of the ways I did that was from my grandmother. We would see her and on Sundays, and then when she moved to Pennsylvania, we used to visit her, and I used to watch her cook, and she was the cook that really inspired me at a young age to get excited about cooking and actually trying things and really doing that. So I had cooking as just like a life skill. I never thought it was anything I would ever do for a living. I was just able to cook for myself. So years went by. I went to college. I did that, and I did radio for a little while and gave that a shot, and then really ended up like, I guess I'm just going to have to get a real job. And I went into the corporate world, started working at Fidelity Investments. So this would have been in my 30s at this point. And then I just was bored out of my mind, Pete. It was not my thing. I was in cube hell, you know, the cube world. And it was just not fun for me. And I remember just like looking out my window going, there's a whole world outside there and I'm locked in this building. And what happened was I was 36. Mm-hmm. And I saw an ad on TV for the Midwest Culinary Institute. And I'm like, and they had an open house. So I was like, I'm going to call in work. I did do that and went down and visited and took a tour, met some chefs. Mm-hmm. And I knew within probably 5 minutes that something just clicked. And it was weird. It was not something that I've ever felt before. It was just really inspiring. The smells, the sounds, the way people were talking, everybody seemed to like be having fun. I'm like, I want to be a part of this, you know? Yeah. So
totally different from the corporate.
Oh, completely different. Monetarily. I mean, hourly. I mean, I was working bank hours, Pete, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't a bad job. Making good money. And, I just decided that that's what I wanted to do. And, at the time, I was married and, that didn't go over as well with the situation I had at the time. And, you know, I had to move on from that, and that ended. And, you know, from that point, I still wanted to do it. I was enrolled and just kind of picked up my things, and I went to go move in with my mom at the time. I was 36.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun and exciting. I started working at the restaurant at school. Uh-huh. Just went from making, you know, corporate money to making $8.75 an hour. That's dramatic. You know,
that's like an adjustment to go from that corporate life.
Yeah.
To being in the kitchen.
Yeah. It wasn't glamorous at all.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that, was very good at the time, considering, you know, I basically just started over, mm-hmm. My entire life. And, then from that point went to work at down at Over the Rhine, and then landed as a sous chef at the University Club downtown. Friend of mine was like, "Hey, do you want to come down and help us out?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow." And the main reason for that was because their reservations were done by, like, the last reservation tonight was 8:30.
Oh, wow.
And if you work in restaurants, you know that's considered banker hours for working in a restaurant. So I was like, "Yeah, I'll be down there. I'm tired of going home at 3 a.m. So, and I was 36, remember?
Yeah.
Like 36, 37, the first restaurant I worked in, I was the oldest person there. I was older than the owner, his wife, any of the servers, the bartender. I was the oldest guy. And also remember, I was 280, 290 probably at that time.
Really?
So I'm way overweight. I'm the oldest person there. And I remember going to culinary school, and I went to this the symposium at the school because Jean Robert was our chef in residence, and he would answer questions for new students coming in. And
people who might not know, I mean,
yes.
Jean Robert, like in the Cincinnati restaurant scene, a legendary name, really,
right.
Kind of nationally.
Right. I mean, it's definitely an icon for Cincinnati. Everybody, if you're in that world, everyone knows who that chef is. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me, and he's like, he used to call me big boy. And he said to me, he's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to work in restaurants? You know? And I said, well, what I really wanted to do is, you know, cook in people's homes. And at that time I had that idea. I had no idea how I was going to get there because, like, I had to make money doing mm-hmm. it. And he's like, well, you know, he goes, that's different. You know, you're always in front of the people. They see you all the time. You have to be very engaging and interact. And I always remember that actually reverberates to me to this day, always being engaging. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we were far from that. One day the chef got let go. I found that out while I was having lunch before I came in. And they were like, "Hey, maybe you should come in now because I just got canned and you're the guy up now." And I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Wow, so trial by fire. Like you were...
Well, yeah, I had no idea what I was doing. And at that point, it was very, very green. I didn't have hardly any considerable restaurant experience, but, you know, I was older. I could kind of sort through things. That was very interesting. And,
do you think that kind of helped you being in that position, having that little bit of life experience before you got into that world?
Yeah, I think so. I think for school, it definitely helped. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the people that I started with were younger and they fell off throughout, you know, the school time. I didn't really have a choice to fall out of that. I didn't want to because that would have been even worse for me. Mm-hmm. So, I just didn't give up. So I just would go in and, to the University Club. And, you know, at the time I had made a little money and I was actually renting a room from my friend down on, 16th and Greenup down in Covington. While I was the chef there at the University Club, my car was actually parked on the street. I came out one day and it was completely, like, totaled up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I couldn't drive it. So I was walking into work at that point. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that isn't fun in the freezing cold from 16th Street to 4th Street downtown.
Yeah.
And eventually I started getting like rides and people would help me and stuff like that. But yeah, so that was very, very difficult.
But you had in the back of your mind, though, that was kind of a goal to become a private chef?
I mean, I thought that was what I was wanting to do, yeah, because it just seemed like I could manage things a little easier. Working in a restaurant in the shape that I was in at the late 30s, I know that sounds young to me now, right, Pete? But at the time, it didn't, and it was really, I can remember going home from the restaurant and we used to get a couple days off, and I can remember just laying in my bed, like, I may not get out of bed today because I wasn't exercising then.
Yeah.
I wasn't putting
You're doing a lot of walking, though.
I was doing a lot of walking, but I was doing a lot of drinking and eating after work, too. You know, the drive-thrus were, the people at the McDonald's drive-thru down in Covington knew who I was. I used to eat like crazy, drink a lot at that time. Just not very good, but I transitioned from that to fast forward to having the opportunity to work at and opening up a restaurant at one of the casinos here with a couple other guys. And we spent all summer working there. Still in my mind, I wanted to do it. Wasn't sure. You know, just like starting any kind of business, you're terrified. Like, who would want me to come into, at this point, I was like, who would want me to come into their house and cook for them? And I just was not really, like, didn't have the courage and the confidence at that point. Well, anyway, this place didn't turn out the way we wanted it. We all kind of fell out of that because the atmosphere there was toxic and it was really preventing us from like being as creative as we wanted to be there. Especially the main chef in charge, not very good. And I can remember I came home and, I was really mad, had a bad night. Mm-hmm. And my wife and her friend were sitting down at the fire in the backyard. And, it was in April, something like that. And they had the fire pit going. And her friend was in town, and they had been drinking a little bit of wine. And I come in, honey badger, you know, I'm mad. I don't want to go back there. And her friend just simply looked at me, and she was like, in this New England accent, was like, well, then what do you really want to do? What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'd like to go cook for people in their homes. And she was like, well, then go do that. And it was really, that was like the moment, that and like the blessing for my wife at the time saying, well, just go and do it.
Just do it.
And I spent a few months writing a plan, this big, glorious business plan. I'm going to do this and do this and do this. But really what it ended up being was just being invited into people's home and creating these incredible experiences and building memories with food.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, nobody knew what I was doing. I had, you know, like, there was like, you know, 50 people following me on Instagram. I didn't have a website. I didn't even have a business card at that point.
Was there somebody that was doing that you sort of, had to pick their brain a little bit?
Not really, but I did go online and see like other people across the country and how they had their stuff set up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, maybe I could do that. Maybe I'd do this. But really it all started with a little liquor store down the street from my house. I was in there probably buying beer because at the time I was still drinking a lot of beer. I was still very overweight. And I was probably in there buying some beer. And I just saw on his counter that he was hosting a wine tasting. And it just popped in my head. I was like, well, I asked him, I said, what are you gonna have food? And he's like, well, I don't know. I'll probably get something and just put it out. And I go, I'll tell you what, why don't I make food for you? I'm starting a new business and this and that. And he was like, sure. He's like, I don't really want to pay him. Like, don't worry about it. You don't have to pay me. And I put out a little event out on Facebook. I had these business cards that I think I stole a logo off some kind of clip art online or something. And I made little business cards. I still have them today. They're hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
And I set those out and I made a little menu and framed it, which I still do today. When I go to events, I put the menu in the frame. And I just made some simple little finger foods and put them out and just stood there. And I was like, all right, I'm just pretending like this is kind of what I do. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if anyone would show up. Well, thankfully, I did have some people show up. And some people actually, because I'm in Edgewood, Kentucky, so people from Cincinnati showed up. And it really was just this eye-opening thing that, you know, people will come. People are interested. Mm-hmm. And it was just that little bit of confidence and excitement that was created by that. And then I think we went from there to one of my wife's friends. Her daughter was having a birthday and they wanted to learn how to make pasta. And I'm like, yep, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Anybody who would want me to cook for them, I'm like, yes, yes, you know. And we just started by word of mouth and just carrying that through. So yeah, I did that. I'm still not making any money. So that was kind of like how it all got started. I know that's kind of a long-winded explanation. There's some gaps there. But it, overall, it was this big life switch at 36 to say, oh, this is what I wanted to do. At the time, I feel like I was a little just dumb. Like I was like, well, why not? Why not go to culinary school at 36? Why not do all this? I didn't realize till years later that that was kind of a insane thing to do. Yeah. it was probably not. I was fortunate at the time, and I didn't have kids. There wasn't a ton of things holding me back. So it was kind of like I just jumped into it. And then over the years, obviously, it's evolved. Different things have happened over the years. We've raised our prices. We've scaled up the business to a little higher end clientele. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I pride myself on, I say it a lot on my videos, but, you know, for 11 plus years, we've never repeated a menu. So if you and Amy want to do a dinner, which we've done, mm-hmm. every time I come into your house, we're going to serve something, we're going to do something different, something fun.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so no two menus have been identical in that time.
So that kind of lends itself to, I mean, when it came to shaping Chef Ken mm-hmm. and who that was going to be, mm-hmm. Did that sort of just build with each dinner as you went along?
Yeah. I mean, you never, one of the craziest things about my business is that for the most part, I never know what I'm walking into when I go into someone's home. They might send me an email. Hey, I'm interested in dinner. Let's pop on the phone. Let's talk. Let's work through a menu. Let's talk about the details. Let's make sure everything's covered. And then I go, okay, I'll see you at 5 o'clock on Saturday. And they're like, okay, you know what the house, what the kitchen looks like, what the situation, the vibe. Every person has a different vibe, different energy. And over the years, I've just learned to kind of match that energy and just elevate it a little bit up. But we really pride ourselves on hospitality and really creating amazing experiences. What happened was with the business, the evolution of it was, you know, obviously at the beginning, I would admittedly say that it was all about like food. It was all about me and kind of like what the food was and mm-hmm. a little more ego than really I should have had at the beginning. But it evolved to where when I used to sit in people's homes and they're sitting at their table and all the phones are gone, and they're laughing, they're engaging, they're sharing stories. It gets serious, you know, and all these magical moments. Mm-hmm. And that's when it dawned on me. And that was probably about 5 years ago where I really, really like figured out like, oh, we're not making plates of food. Yeah. I mean, that's what we use. Well, we're creating memories for people that hopefully they carry on for the rest of their lives. So that's my goal every time. I'm going to use the food to create memories that last a lifetime, that they always remember. Remember your 50th birthday where we had friends over and that chef? Oh, I love that chef. And the food was great. But remember so-and-so shared that story and we talked about that. And, you know, now maybe that person's past or whatever, to have those moments together mm-hmm. that are really, really magical. And, you know, that's what we do. It's kind of like a musician. You're a musician. It's not really the guitar. The guitar is laying down here on the table. It's plugged in, but it's until someone plays it and that sound resonates out. That's what helps people create memories. And you're just the person playing the music, but the music outwardly, that the art or the music, you will, that creates those memories that someone's like, oh, I remember when I saw that band and they played that song that they never play. And mm-hmm. I was with this person. Those are the things you're going to remember. You're going to remember, you know, who you're with and those shared experiences. And that's really the basis of what the business is about, what we do. So it evolved from being like, I don't know what I'm doing. I kind of know what I'm doing, to really within the last 5 years, really honed in on what we really do. Yeah. And what we do is create memories that last a lifetime. And the food, for me, is the fun part. I mean, it's like the selfish part, because I enjoy cooking. I enjoy creating beautiful plates and food, but it's really like, it's about getting that food down and getting the wine out and having them create memories. That really is exciting for me now. That's mm-hmm. the part that I really want to make sure that we do every single time.
Well, and it's been a lot of different memories too. I know people hire you for any number of different occasions. Is there one big moment that like really stands out to you that you experienced when you were with someone?
Yeah.
With a client.
Of course. Yeah. This moment is like, it's so much that I like, it usually chokes me up every time I tell this story. So hopefully we'll see what happens here. But, there was a friend of mine who wanted to plan a dinner just right after Christmas. And I was like, okay, it's fine. They were a friend of mine. They lived up the street. I had done dinners for her sister, who actually just lived across the street. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Just let me know. And I hadn't heard from him. I was like, that's interesting. So I was at the gym. I just texted her. I said, hey, just wanted to touch base with what was going on. She's like, hey, can I, let me have a minute. I was like, all right. And she's like, well, we're not going to be able to do dinner on that day. It was for their mother, actually, and her birthday. And I said, okay, what's up? And she's like, well, my dad's going to pass away tomorrow.
Oh.
And I was like, okay. We definitely don't worry about it. If you know, you want to cancel, whatever, no big deal. I don't care. I never take deposits from people. Just, that's fine. What can we do? You know, I'm just... Do you need it? You know, no, we're fine. And then a little time went by and she messaged me back and she's like, we still want to do the dinner for my mom. And I was like, okay, all right. So the first time kind of was like a getting together of like the family for a celebration of life and her birthday, kind of all those things together. And so we did the dinner. It was, you know, somber, but they were still, you know, happy. It was her mom's birthday. And, you know, this family is a really cool family. I've known them for years. And, my wife and I made a decision that like we weren't going to like charge them for the dinner. So she went, at that time they were like, so what do I owe you? And I'm like, you don't owe me anything. And, I said, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what we do. This is, we wanted to just be here for you. And, she started crying. I started crying. Everybody in the room was crying. And, that's the pivotal moment where I realized that what we're doing is a lot bigger than just fancy food with flowers on it. Mm-hmm. It was this bigger deal of we're actually parts of these amazing moments with people. And that's when it occurred to me, it was a whole shift in the business and how I looked at things. That from that point on, it was about creating these memories that people can hold on to for the rest of their life, not oh, it's just, you know, me being this fancy chef with my arms folded and my apron on. It was more about creating these memories and how important that was. So every detail, everything we did filtered through that idea that we want to make sure everyone has a great time. And that point on, the business completely, once I took the focus and refocused the business and the brand, is when it just kind of started maneuvering upward. Mm-hmm. And it felt good altogether. Even doing it was more fun, because I was really focused in on, of course, like I'm always focused on the details and how things look and the food and making sure, you know, because I'm like, oh my God, I want it to taste good. Mm-hmm. I don't want their memories to be that the food wasn't good. That's not what we want. So, but then it was like, okay, we know the food's going to be good. We know it's going to be warm. It's going to be great. It's going to be tasty. They're going to love it. It's going to be beautiful. But it's like going beyond that. Mm-hmm. So how we interact with the client when we walk in, how we, talk to them, how we interact with their dog that's running underneath our feet, or their kids that are kind of hanging out and running around with us while we're kind of getting our thing in. Every little thing that we do is all about making people feel comfortable, and then getting to the point where they start eating the food and drinking the wine and making memories and laughing and, you know, having these really memorable conversations. And that dinner was what really started that refocusing of the business. Mm-hmm. And that's how we do it up to this day.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, for somebody listening who's never hired a private chef.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, as you kind of just spelled out there, you know, about this experience. Mm-hmm. What can people expect? Like if they hire the at-home chef.
Yeah.
To come in, you know, and how do you figure out menu and things like that?
Well, you know, one of the first things I always do is when someone reaches out to me, I'm always asking them, what are we celebrating? You know, it's usually when they hire me, it's to celebrate a birthday, anniversary, people get engaged. I've been in situations where engagements have happened. Or we're there after the engagement happens. So what they will expect is that conversation. Oh, it's my wife's birthday. Mm-hmm. All right, tell me about her. You know, what is she like? What is her favorite meal? Have you guys shared a meal together that, you know, maybe at a restaurant or somewhere that you really like? Oh, yeah. We like going here and, you know, blah, 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 and getting this salad and the soup or whatever, and getting this steak or whatever. She really likes, you know, lobster. We never make it at home. That's usually my second question is, tell me, if they don't really have an answer to that first one, it's usually like, well, tell me something that you really, really like, but you would never make at home.
Yeah.
You know, and that usually opens it up. So say, oh, I don't know how to make creme brulee, but I really love it. Or I don't really make a lot of like surf and turf because I don't really know how to handle the lobsters or how to cook it, or mm-hmm. or I don't know where to go and get really good steaks or you know, whatever. And then the beyond that is like, tell me about, you know, who's coming. Is there any restrictions? Do we have any limitations on what we can use? And then it just start to talk about the progression of the dinner. And is there a theme? You know, sometimes there's themes. Like sometimes people are like, yeah, we want to have a big Italian dinner, you know? And I'm like, fantastic.
Well, along those lines, I mean, yes. Do you get kind of like a mix of like, you know, small and intimate, like, you know, just a couple, or, you know, like a big dinner party sort of thing?
Yeah, we do anything from like two people on up. So, mm-hmm. you know, if people want to have a big, like I'm doing one, the end of the month, that's kind of big. And then one at the beginning of April, I think it's like 12 to 14 people. So that's usually, there's usually a situation for that. Mm-hmm. Someone celebrating, a lot of guys and or ladies, they'll have like their peers in from work, or they'll be doing a meeting, doing whatever. We do anything from two people, intimate little dinners, to up to bigger dinners, but typically dinners are like in someone's home, somewhere between 6 and 12, mm-hmm. 6 and 10, you know, whatever fits at their table, you know. But, you know, we've done weddings in people's homes up to 20 people, but that's kind of where we land.
Yeah.
Because once you get beyond that, you kind of lose that intimate feeling. And so we kind of keep our parties from like 20 or under. Because everything we do is you know, from scratch, plate it, it's ready to go. So it's more of an upscale fine dining experience in people's homes. Mm-hmm. So we try to keep it somewhat intimate.
Yeah. So it's worked out okay for that 36-year-old guy who decided that he was going to make a big life change. I mean, you know, if somebody's listening to this, watching this, and they're thinking of doing something similar, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, I missed my chance.
Yeah.
I miss my opportunity.
Yeah.
But you're proof that that's not the case.
Yeah. I don't recommend it for anyone because, you know, it is tough. There was lots of moments, even to this day, of things where, I'm like, oh, I don't know. They asked me to make that. I don't know what I'm going to do. How's that work? Or, man, or someone's asking me something I've never made before. And, you know, we have to deliver at a high standard. I would tell people who are out there and you're thinking about wanting to make a life change, the number one thing you have to do is have a passion and for what you want and for what that might be, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be cooking. Because in the hard times where you're like not making any money or you think you have imposter syndrome and you're like, who's going to ask me to do whatever? Or, you know, it's the passion behind it that carries you through those moments where it could be very lonely. Doing something on your own can be very lonely because you're looking at everybody else and they have this job, or they have that job, and they go to work, they go home, and you're kind of like, what am I doing here? I for years would look at those other people and their jobs and be like so envious. I'm like, they're not working on a Saturday or like, you know, or whatever. They're, you know, Monday through Friday and they can leave work and be like, I don't need to worry about that. I'm going to go home and like live, you know, have fun. But
that's the appearance though.
What
their life is like.
That could be, they could be miserable and wanting to do something else. Mm-hmm. I think if you really have a passion for whatever that might be that you want to do, that's super important. I always enjoyed cooking. Mm-hmm. So for cooking for me, if I have to cook all day for an event, yes. I mean, at 52, it's a little tiring still. It never feels like how it felt when I was in that cubicle.
What would you tell that 36-year-old sous chef who was overweight, sweating it out, wondering what the future was going to hold?
Oh man, advice. I'd be like, it's all going to work out. It's not going to make sense how it works out, but it's going to all work out. I promise. Maybe start losing weight then. I probably would have said that. Let's try to get, why don't you trying to get healthy now? Definitely harder as you get older.
But that's been a big part of your life too. I mean, is that you've taken ownership of your body and your health.
Mm-hmm.
Is that difficult as a chef when you are, you know,
so difficult,
especially, you know, I know you mentioned creme brulee and I know that you make an amazing creme brulee.
Yeah, that's right. I do. food is always like at a young age when we talk about food and me, like we're best friends. Like even if I didn't have a best friend, food was my best friend. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's ever struggled with their weight, they're like, man, you know, as long as I can go get whatever that might be. I mean, for me, it would be like me and you after this going down to a restaurant downtown and having this like glorious steak dinner
right.
with wine and cocktails and then having cigar, like,
which I'd be fine with.
I think we might do. But, yeah. The thing about it is like after being in a chef and being in this area, like I know where the good bakeries are. I know the best pastry chefs in town that are just making the best food. So for me, food has always been, I've had a love-hate relationship with the food. When I was a chef and I was working in restaurants, you just ate when you could and you ate whatever. And then you go out after work and then again, you would eat, you know, whatever was open at 1 o'clock in the morning, which happened to be either White Castle or Waffle House or McDonald's. They had the McDonald's, thank God, that one in Covington was 24 hours. I could go down and get my, you know, my quarter pounder with fries and a shake. Yeah, that was my order. And, So I would, you know, and I would, you know, take it home, eat, and I'm done eating at like 2 in the morning. I don't know if you try to lose weight, but that's not the way to lose weight.
Yeah.
And then I was drinking too. So I was having beers with, you know, industry people going out, doing stuff. And, so it was just kind of like, that's just what I did. That was how I was surviving. And, I always loved food. I didn't have the right relationship with food, my whole life until I got a little older. COVID happened. And it was at that point where I was like, you know, people that are overweight are not doing well with this. And maybe I should try to lose weight. Maybe I shouldn't eat this, this, and this so much. Or maybe I shouldn't drink for a little while, which I stopped drinking completely during that time. I lost the majority of my weight. And my relationship with food changed slightly. Now, it's still hard when someone, you know, we don't bring things in the house that are bad, not real bad. But then when I have a dinner or we bring things in the kitchen that are not good, I'm surrounded by like all this stuff that like I would typically never eat or never have around me at this point because I don't have the best in self-control. Because I can look at something and go, oh, I can put that, I can grill it, I can make this, I can do that. And then like before you know it, there's like a table full of food, you know, like let's do all this. And then I will like eat it. So now it's like I have to be very conscious and deliberate on those days where I'm cooking for clients to be like, no. This is their food, and that's, I'm serving it to them. Lots of times, we'll be at their house, and there'll be stuff left over. I'm like, no, that'll stay with them. We don't want to do that. Especially while I was doing, 75 hard, when you're not allowed to have any alcohol or any sweets or cheap meals. It was like, you know, people would want, the stuffed apple crisps that I do for dessert. I mean, incredible, topped with Grater's ice cream, caramel, you know, all this stuff. And like I'm making them, they're all laid out. And then I'm like, can't have that ice cream. Like, so we will leave it with them or whatever we could leave with them. Because I mean, it couldn't come home. Like I couldn't have it. We give it to people at work for me. I'm like, do you want that? Take it. We do that all the time too. So it's those little things that I've made adjustments to, but food and me, I think, is like part of why I do what I do. It's like kind of like that was always my best friend. I enjoyed cooking at a young age. And then I had this like love relationship with food. Now it's more of a love hate. I've been able to manage it to kind of stay in a certain weight range and not get like crazy. But it's still hard, you know, it's still hard. It's very hard, but, I enjoy food a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And I know where all the good food is, especially in this area in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. When I think about where I would want to go to dinner tonight or whatever, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go there, get this, get that, you know, and I know the chef, so maybe they send something out, and which they typically do. And then, you know, then it's like, before you know it, you're like, oh, that's 4,000 calories that we had fun with. So, I have to really manage it to know, like, not to get off the rails.
Sure. Well, when it comes to the overall experience and, you know, earning a seat at the table, you hear a lot about that expression in life. Seems like you've gotten to a place where you're happy in life, where things are going well. Kind of leading into this podcast then, a seat at the table, What do you envision this podcast being? What would you like to share? Because again, you've experienced a lot. You've been in a lot of people's homes.
Yeah.
Everybody is either celebrating something or mourning or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever the case may be, a lot of those great stories. Mm-hmm. What do you envision a seat at the table with Chef Ken being like?
Well, I think first of all, what I want people to understand is that it's not just going to be all like chef people or food people. Mm-hmm. In all the time that I've built my social media over the years, I became friends with all kinds of people all across the world, actually. Some are private chefs, some chefs around, but some not chefs, and some just wonderful people I've been able to meet in this journey of building my business. Met a lot of entrepreneurs that have different businesses. So what I want to do is have an empty seat available to bring people to the table and find out more about them, you know. And I believe, just after going to people's homes, I'm always hearing at least one great story every time I go to someone's home. And I'm like, I want to do that. Like, I want to set my own table and have people bring their stories and share those with myself and with you guys. And that's what I'm excited about. So we're not only just going to have food people on, we're going to have all kinds of different professions, different things that people do. We're going to have a lot of great stories, I think, that people are really going to want to be engaged with, because this is kind of like how I built the business. We're not going to fill your time with a lot of ads or sponsorships. So, you know, we need people to build this grassroots. And we're really excited about bringing on a diverse group of people to the table and really bringing their and highlighting their stories, whether it's building a business or it's, time in a restaurant or in hospitality, or even if it's someone that has a different type of business, or just great stories is what I'm looking for. That's really what I want to bring to the table. And I think it's just going to be amazing. I'm really super excited about it.
It's just an extension of the overall experience that you mm-hmm. talked about then.
Mm-hmm. I just believe everybody deserves a seat at the table. So I want to bring on all kinds of different people, whether that be, like I said, people from restaurants that I've met over the years, or if it's someone building a business in Montana mm-hmm. that does that or something. I want to bring a lot of different people to the table and just have fun. I think, I know over the years, especially in my weight loss journey, I've really loved listening to podcasts. I think we're going to have a fun, exciting, and informative podcast, and I can't wait to. This is the first one talking about myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now we get to know you a little bit and what you're all about. So, you know, well, hey, cheers to a seat at the table.
Cheers to you. Thanks, Pete. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, follow, and share the show. Every great story deserves a seat at the table. Until next time, thanks for listening. I'm Chef Ken. See you later.